Hey, hey, it's Conrad Thompson, and you're listening to 83 Weeks with Eric Bischoff. Eric, what's going on, man? How are you?
I'm just happy to be home, brother. It's been another one of those great travel weekends where I was supposed to be home at 1:30 Sunday afternoon, and I was lucky to stagger in last night around 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. I'm just happy to be home.
We're glad you're here as well. We had intentions of recording before you skipped town. And our computers didn't get along that day. And then, man, I was just getting the play-by-play. Living in the middle of nowhere comes at a cost, does it not, Eric?
Yeah, we refer to it as the Wyoming tax. You know, we don't have a state income tax here, so that's kind of nice. But we do have a different kind of tax. And that's for those of us who travel for a living, or at least for a big part of our living. Because in my case, typically, I'll take the 2 hours, drive up to Billings, go to wherever I'm going, fly back home from Billings to Cody. I've gotten so used to that, it's no big deal. I kind of enjoy it, to be honest. But it's, you know, 2 hour drive. This particular trip, I was heading out to Hartford, Connecticut. And this particular trip, I decided, no, I'm going to fly out of Cody. I did. And unfortunately, the odds of getting to wherever you're going or getting back from wherever you've been into Cody is at best a 50-50 proposition. Mm. But I rolled the dice. Maybe it's going to work out. It didn't. The flight that I was originally booked on is still not arrived in Cody yet. It's supposedly coming in this afternoon, but even that's unknown. So I ended up buying another ticket, flying into Billings, and fortunately my brother-in-law came up, picked me up, drove me home last night so I could do this show because I was already late. So I appreciate that. Joe McCall, shout out to you, brother. I appreciate the help. But yeah, I'm just happy to be here. And I am never going to fly out of Cody again when I have anything important on the back end.
Well, we're glad you're here. And man, I got to at least acknowledge, if you're watching with us over at 83.com, we're looking at a different backdrop today. You're not in your home studio, or as you call it, the bunkhouse. It looks like you might be set up at the infamous Bischoff bar right now inside the cabin there. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm still having technical issues with my computer. Evidently, my keyboard is not feeling well and not cooperating and not being a player. So I went out there this morning out to the bunkhouse to set up and do the show. And lo and behold, my keyboard still didn't work. So yeah, we're back in. We're improvising from the famous. This is about 120-year-old bar at this point. Have to do math. Out of Hardin, Montana.
So but, yeah. around 1900 is when that bar's from.
No, it was before that. It was a little bit before that.
Wow.
So yeah, it's pretty old, and there's a couple of them in the country. Robert Redford had one at his resort in Sundance. It was almost identical to this one. There's one in a place called the Palace Bar, which is a very famous bar in Prescott, Arizona. Beautiful bar. It's bigger than mine. That's a beautiful one. And I've seen one or two others around. Pretty rare.
Just for fun, can we get you to post over on your Twitter or maybe on the 83 Weeks Twitter a picture of the bar? Because it's such a beautiful bar. I don't think we've ever really shown it here on the
show. Yeah. In fact, while we're... what we're doing throughout the show, I'll take a look in my photos, but I think I've got a picture in my photo thing, and I'll send it over to Dave, and maybe he can throw it up and look at it during this show.
Oh, how about that? Check us out at 83weeks.com if you haven't already, and be sure to hit the subscribe button, turn the notifications bell on. You never know when we're going to go live, because, boy, things are changing in the wrestling business. And I had a chance. We were actually recording, as luck would have it, on a Tuesday morning. Now, normally, Eric and I try to record on a Sunday morning. But it's a Tuesday morning. So as a result, we have both seen Monday Night Raw. And I got to tell you, Eric, I feel like this was one of the better Raws in recent memory. I'm not going to go so far as to say it's one of the best Raws of all time and all that, but I thought it was a really, really good show. And it went off the air with a really old school angle. It felt like Jim Crockett Promotions or something. It was a really fun episode. I'm curious to see what you thought, because I know you've had a stance on blood before, but I thought it was used pretty effectively. What'd you think about Monday Night Raw last night?
I really enjoyed it. No, I watched it at 6 o'clock this morning, my time. So I got up early, started pounding coffee, and wanted to really be able to focus on the show. And that 3 hours flew by. Now, I did speed up through the commercials and things like that, so I didn't have to sit there for 3 hours. But wow, what I didn't see anything that didn't hold my attention. That this show was so well done, and I found so many things about it, especially in light of a lot of the conversation, social media conversation, as of late, about how many minutes of wrestling, like that fucking matters to anybody that's an actual producer. It only matters to that small, you know, subsection of audience who, you know, loves wrestling just for the sake of wrestling. It could care less if it means anything or there's a story or characters or anything like that. But I think we were like 22 or 24 minutes into the show.
Yeah.
Before we heard a word.
Yeah.
It was great. And that segment with Rock and Cody. Now, Cody, you know, we got a lot of narrative out of Cody. He set it up really, really well. I came out. You're expecting something explosive. I was. And all you got was that stare down with the little whisper at the end. And I thought, immediately thought, man, this is, if anybody ever wants to take a look at the saying less is more and why that's important, look at this segment. Watch the people in the crowd. Forget about Rock and Cody for a moment. Just focus on the crowd. Listen to them and watch them. They were far more engaged in that stare down for however long it was. I didn't time it. They were far more engaged and interactive during that stare down than they would have ever been during any kind of an angle or, God please, a match. That's the other thing that I noticed. So that's that point. I thought it was a fascinating study in the art of less is more.
Yes.
Because it worked. It just worked so well. The other thing that I really liked, I liked the Becky Lynch Rhea match a lot because it was a perfect, again, a perfect study in the art of keeping people away. Had they done what typically we see so often is some kind of physicality. You know, there was physicality, but the physicality was in the form of them two trying to get to each other. And there was good contact. There was some heat there, no doubt about it. But they were able to make the audience just want to see that match without giving them too much.
Yeah.
That's what I'm really trying to say. So often when you're trying to get heat, you're getting close to the finish line, right? WrestleMania being the finish line, you're getting close to the event. It's so easy, and I think typical for talent and producers to want to see the action, get heat. God, beat the hell out of Becky. Get heat on Becky. You know, typically would be heel would get the heat on the baby face, leave him in a pool of blood. That's what they were doing at the end. So they artfully gave the audience enough to satisfy them, but they didn't give them so much to oversatisfy them and therefore build anticipation. Another really classic, well done example keeping the talent apart, create anticipation, want to see the resolution. I thought that was really the opening match. I know I'm bouncing around here, but guys, I've been drinking coffee since 5:30. You're going to have to strap in. I can't. The other thing that I really liked was the Ricochet. What is it? JD MacArthur? JD something?
Right.
Sorry, I don't know his name. That was a phenomenal match. I mean, that for the audience that needs to see fast paced, kind of a lucha, high flying, cruiserweight esque match. Ricochet's a freak. He's so good. I mean, wow. That was fun to watch. What else did I really like about
Let me time out. I know you're doing like a Will Ospreay love fest. I'm grateful for that because I think he's phenomenal talent. I think I've mentioned this. But I don't recall. Have you seen his match with Ricochet from several years ago? Maybe 2017?
No.
Go just throw that in your Google machine when we finish today. Now that I know you were impressed with what Ricochet did, I can't wait for you to see what he and Will Ospreay did like 7 years ago. It'll blow your mind. Especially in the context of 7 years ago.
And I think I will do that because I'm interested. One of the things, you know, I've always loved, this is one of the reasons I created the cruiserweight division, because I love the high flying, faster paced action. So it's not like I've never liked that style of wrestling. I was impressed with it enough back in whatever, 1995 or so, to create a cruiserweight division and bring people in from all over the world to showcase that style. Before anybody else did on a regular basis in prime time. So it's not like a newfound love for me. But what I like about what I saw with Ricochet and JD, and I'm so sorry, JD, I don't remember your last name.
McDonough.
Get it right.
McDonough.
McDonough. JD McDonough, one of my favorite new talents in WWE. JD McDonough. But one of the things I liked about it is the moves were, they meant something. They were part of the story. It wasn't guys going out there and flying around for the sake of flying around. It made sense.
Right.
And I enjoyed watching. The precision and timing was mind-boggling. But it was that it made sense to me. And there wasn't too much of it. I didn't feel like I was watching really big, high-risk moves just for the sake of right. a really big, high-risk move. I guess that's what I'm kind of meant. What else did I really love? Gable.
I mean,
Gable and Sammy. Chad Gable's finding his character.
Yeah.
And I love it. He is a great guy. I worked with him a little bit in 2019, trying to help him find his groove a little bit. And didn't get to spend a lot of time with him, but the little bit of time I did spend with him was really, really enjoyable. And I was so impressed with him. And he's such an amazing performer, but he's never really found his groove.
Hmm.
This might be it. Let's see where it goes. I've always been a fan of Sammy's, but I think Sammy's facials, recognizing, rather than being defensive, as we normally would see when somebody's like Chad was coming up and telling him what he needed to do to beat Bronson Reed and all that. He sold me. Sammy sold me, and he's such a great performer that I was excited about that. I'm excited about the combination of Chad and where that goes. And obviously the end, you know, and there was a lot of other stuff in the middle, but let's talk about the blood. How did I really feel?
Let me time out for just a minute. What are you thinking about the blood? Because I wanted to ask you, you know, we've talked a little bit about PG and this move to Netflix. What could that mean? And very early in the program, you know, we saw that great Cody Rhodes promo. We saw the whisper from The Rock. I told my wife the same thing. I said, boy, that right there is less is more. It proves that sometimes you don't need 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag, as we say. But I mean, less is more, because now there's so much intrigue about what did he say? What does it mean? Blah, blah, blah. And then later when he stopped and asked about that by the interviewer, he says, go ask Cody Rhodes. And then she says, you know, she pursues Cody, and it kept a thread all the way through. I thought they did a great job.
Yes, exactly.
But what was really neat in the middle to me, talking about two things, and then we'll go back to the show. The CM Punk promo where he said, you know, hey, my arm doesn't work, but my mouth still does. And he made some sort of reference to, but we're not on Netflix yet. April knows what I'm talking about. So there's a Netflix reference that maybe we're going to get a little more edgy. And then he called out when Drew McIntyre referenced himself as the chosen one. I thought it was interesting that Punk said, oh yeah, who chose you? Almost daring him to say Vince McMahon's name on the television program, which we know can't happen. I thought that was a fantastic segment and one of my favorite moments on the show, that whole Seth, Punk, Drew. I think Drew and Seth are like two of the unsung heroes. I know all of the attention right now is on Cody, Rock, and Roman, and I get that. But real MVPs of the last year for WWE got to be Drew McIntyre, who I think is doing his best work yet. And Seth Rollins has been doing this on a bad wheel. Really impressive what they're doing. But then fast forward to the end of the show. Not only the blood, but The Rock cursing multiple times, including where you could visibly see where he said,
"But wait, that can't be, because Dave Meltzer said that the more everybody wants Rock to sanitize the show and be an example. Dave Meltzer said it, so it must be true, right? Did Rock not get the memo? What the fuck?
Great question. We'll have to ask Mr. Johnson. But when he says this is what happens when you fuck with the final boss, I was like, wow, we're just dropping F-bombs on Raw. Now, granted, they knew it was coming and it was bleeped and they had plenty of coverage. But I'll tell you what, you want to talk about suspending disbelief. Everybody listening to this knows what pro wrestling is. But in real life, if you and I hated each other, we would not say, I'm going to kick your hiney, Mr. Bischoff. I am so upset right. with you. That's not the way we talk. And for him to say, this is what happens when you fuck with the final boss, it felt like a movie. It felt way more real than the cartoon confines of pro wrestling that sometimes has existed. I think this is a huge step in the right direction and maybe further proof that maybe not attitude era. It's a different era. We got to stop saying attitude era. I think a lot of people in the business are sick of us referencing the attitude era. I think this is, I don't know, not PG, but I loved it as an adult wrestling fan, as a 42-year-old man. It was very well done and very believable. I like the blood. I like the F word. I like leaning into that. Now I know you can't do it all the time. Got to make it special. If everybody's bleeding and cursing, it's not special. It doesn't stand out, but I thought it was done fabulous.
Yeah, I did too. And I want to talk about that again, but I'm glad you brought up Punk and Drew Seth. Sitting through that, I actually felt bad. I empathize with Punk because can't wrestle.
Right.
He can't really do anything physical in the ring.
Right.
Obviously, the audience wanted to see him. They wanted him to be a real part of the show. It's evident. But that's a tough spot to be in. It's a tough spot to be in when you can't do anything and everybody knows you can't do it. So I thought, and as I'm listening to this, and I listen to it closely, I'm thinking, man, they're spending a lot of time just to make a point that CM Punk's going to be in commentary.
Right.
Like, who the fuck cares? Really? I mean, if you're a big CM Punk fan, of course, you're going to be happy. But it's not like he's going to go out there and do anything other than run his mouth. And I don't know what the timeline is for him to get back in the ring or not.
Months.
I'm guessing it.
Months.
Yeah, so it's not going to be like a week after WrestleMania, he's going to be in a match or he's going to be in a program. That's not it. But I'm sitting through that segment and I'm thinking, you're spending way too much time on it. Way too much. And there were some awkward moments and reactions because my feeling was if it was scripted, it was loosely scripted.
Absolutely.
I could be wrong, but it had enough peaks and valleys in terms of its quality. And I don't even say in terms of its.
It didn't feel scripted.
It wasn't as fluid as scripted promos tend to be. Therefore, it felt real. And I loved that. But I thought, man, this is going too long. And then came the finish of the segment. And Seth with the sidekick, boom. And now it all of a sudden, however long that segment was, it might have been 6 minutes or 8 minutes, I guess. All of a sudden, it all made sense. It worked for me because they finished it. They finished it perfectly. And you delivered on that.
I thought it was a fantastic segment. I couldn't help but notice, not playing conspiracy, but I couldn't help but notice that when Punk went to get out of the ring, he braced on the bad arm. So when he goes through the ropes to jump out, he had all his weight on that arm. And I was like, okay, then. Clearly he's been working hard and he's been rehabbing. Now, I don't have any inside knowledge, but obviously I know that Bruce had tricep surgery, I think the same week that Punk did. And from what I understand, that's several months. I would think he's probably even very conservatively 2 months away. So do I think we'll see Punk over the summer? Absolutely. Any chance we'll see him at SummerSlam? 100%. I don't think we're going to see him turn that into a three-way, which is what a lot of people have been asking online. It's like, I just don't see that being possible at WrestleMania. However, they're not just going to have Punk do commentary. He's going to be involved in that match somehow. He's going to influence the finish somehow, and that will set up future business. And I, for one, am looking forward to that. And I'm wondering, were there other Easter eggs in the program? I don't know if you noticed this, but I noticed it live, and then online, man, it felt like it was everywhere right after. Where people were noticing the final scene with The Rock and Cody brawling outside in the rain in 50 to 53 degree Chicago weather and Rock's running around with a tank top on, which is awesome. There's a big tractor trailer there that moves all the WWE rings and lighting and rigs. And now remember, he's referred to himself as the final boss. And in the background, we see these trucks, and we've seen them a lot. But normally, there's a lot of current talent on there. This particular truck, which I admit I've never seen before, but I don't know that it's brand new, but certainly made me wonder, is that a coincidence that the only two other people that are seen in this shot, besides Cody and The Rock, are the faces on that big tractor trailer being John Cena and Stone Cold Steve Austin? We've heard the rumors that John Cena is going to appear at WrestleMania. We don't know at what capacity, but he's going to be there. And it does stand to reason it's WrestleMania 40. It's in Philadelphia. It's the 25-year anniversary of when Stone Cold wrestled The Rock in the main event at WrestleMania 15. We're back in Philadelphia. He called himself the final boss. Is that an Easter egg? Is that some foreshadowing? What say you, Eric?
I say that truck was lit. I mean, lit, professionally lit for the cameras.
Yeah.
So there was not, oh, look at that. Just happened to be there.
And it was framed up.
And here's what, I mean, it was centered in the frame.
Yes.
It was, you know, Rock made sure he was positioned and he put Cody to make sure that we got a full look at it. I mean, if you look at that right now, that image is probably 25% of that frame.
Yes.
You know, and it was lit properly. So that was a really cool Easter egg. And it, you know, kind of opens up the door. I, but the 25-year anniversary you referred to with Rock, could Rock get involved? Could Rock be surprised that you're, Cody needs?
You're saying Rock? Right, you mean Austin?
I mean Austin. Yes, I'm sorry, yes. Austin. Thank you. Yeah, could Austin be there to, you know, lend an assist if Cody needs? I don't know. But see, here's the fun part. We're talking about it.
Yes.
And we don't know. And we're curious. And we're wondering, just like we wondered what Rock whispered to Cody. When you can get your audience asking questions, whether it's on social media or back in the day, they called it water cooler talk, right? Yes. Everybody would get together, you know, the next day after Raw or after Nitro and, you know, talk about what happened.
That's yes.
One of the reasons the shows were so successful at that time. Because people were engaged. And I think the less is more approach with Cody and Rock in the beginning created that question that was, as you pointed out correctly, thread throughout the show. It didn't just happen and then, oh, that's right, I remember that. By the end of the show, they threaded it throughout the show to make the audience focus. What they really did is they told the audience to watch. And subtly or subliminally, you're telling the audience to pay attention because something big is going to happen. But they do it in the form of a question as opposed to a threat. Rock could have come out and said, Cody Rhodes, before the end of the night, I'm going to bloody you up, then make your mama cry. Okay, now I know what's going to happen. Not curious. I may tune in to see it, but I'm not curious about it. But the way they did it got us all talking and asking. And I love that. Who's the third man? The reason the NWO worked as well as it did. There's a variety of reasons, but one of the big ones is the who's the third man? Because for months, people were asking the question. And if you can get the audience to ask questions as opposed to making statements, you won. Creatively, you won. That's exactly what last night's show did. So effective. So yeah, I think it was intentional. I think it is a foreshadow. Here's another good one. If you want to go back and watch it, there's a couple other things, you know, business of the business wise, not so much storyline or character driven, but when we first start to go outside, Rock's laying out Cody backstage, he's dragging him around, bouncing him off shit, hitting him with a garbage can, all that good stuff. He goes to take him outside. And as he opens the door, what do we see? We see the back of Cody's bus.
Yep.
Which is wrapped with a Wheatley vodka advertisement.
Yep.
Now, I don't know what that deal is. I don't know if that's a Cody deal or a WWE deal.
WWE deal.
But here's what I do know. What was it, Connor?
WWE deal.
It's a WWE deal. Okay, now I'm working. So Rock opens up the door, doors over his left shoulder. As he opens up the door, he holds it open. And once again, right in the center of the frame is Wheatley Vodka.
Yeah.
Awesome is that. That's the business of the wrestling business.
Yes, it is.
That's a big step because now we've talked about a lot of times over the last 5 years. Alcohol and wrestling have never been able to find a way to play together.
Right.
Another big thing that's changed. And that's a massive thing for business because if you can open up the door to alcohol advertising within the show, you've got a plethora. I don't think I've used plethora. I have it. You have a plethora of brands out there who have a hard time advertising because they're alcohol. It's expensive. And now they've got a great audience to advertise to that is opening up the doors to them where they've been closed before, whether it was WWE closing the doors or USA closing the doors, or maybe the vodka industry or the alcohol industry just being too afraid of it, of wrestling because of the kids in the audience. But whatever, man, they're embracing it. And I just thought it was really cool the way they did that. And there were so many other examples, you know, Michael Cole and whoever it was doing color and play-by-play for a fucking Godzilla movie. I mean, did you see that? I don't know if you skipped through the commercials or not.
I skipped it.
Oh my God, it was awesome. It was so well done. And not really commenting on the quality of how well it was done, because it really, really was. But the fact that somebody sat down and negotiated a deal with a movie company,
yeah,
which have historically, they've spent a lot of money in advertising decades. They were always a go-to. If there's movies coming out a certain time of year, you could always plan on that ad spend within wrestling. But WWE is now taking it to an entirely different level. And in such an effective way. You go back and check out that commercial. It's really interesting. And the fact that they can make an interesting commercial, yeah, that holds your attention inside of a wrestling show is another big step forward. It's just a lot of things excited about from the business to business, what I saw.
Well, I know what you're...
Now, you asked me the question, how did I feel about the blood?
Whoa. Eric, you know, occasionally we have to take a time out. This is a big deal. And I know that some of our listeners are like, yeah, what's the big deal? The big deal is blade jobs, quote unquote, have been banned from WWE for a long time. Several years ago, there was a pretty controversial moment at a SummerSlam. I think it was in New York, where Brock Lesnar hardwayed Randy Orton with some really stiff elbows on the brow and got some real blood going. And I know that was the headbutt with Vince McMahon and KO, but I mean, a traditional old school wrestling zippity doo dah. Cody did it in the parking lot right outside of the bus. We don't normally see blood on WWE television. When we have blood on WWE TV, we would get a wide shot. It would be accidental. You know, we would try to shy away from it. We embraced it here. And I know that, you know, we talked about this at the very start of the show, just with the whisper, less is more. And if you're not bleeding in every single segment, every single week, it matters. This is WrestleMania. And this is sort of that awkward period between pay-per-views where I think by and large fans are ready and have been ready for a week or two for this show to happen. But we've still got to build television. Not a little bit, but 5 hours a week. So how do we keep it going? Well, we reach in our old bag of tricks and we find a razor. Eric, what'd you think?
I didn't like it.
Oh, come on.
And I have a thing that I can't get over. And look, it wasn't excessive.
No.
It wasn't, we zoomed in with a camera and nobody licked the blood off their face. You know, they kind of grotesque shit I've seen. So it was judicious enough that I wasn't completely turned off by it. I think I get it. I know why they did it. It's just, I am absolutely in the minority on this. I don't know why I feel as strongly as I do about it, because most things I'm pretty pretty flexible.
Yeah.
In many ways when it comes to creative. But there's something about it. I don't know. I would have, you know, maybe if it would have been a little less blood, I said it wasn't too much. That shot that Dave just put up, I guess I didn't notice it as much. But maybe if it would have been just a little bit more and we weren't showcasing it quite as much as we were trying to make that point, if it looked a little bit more organic. And I'm not saying cut away from it, pretend it didn't happen, shoot wide shots. But if you're watching along on 83weeks.com, you're seeing what I'm seeing, and that's the camera's right there. I mean, yes. 25% of that frame is Cody bleeding.
Yes.
I think that was just a little bit more than necessary, but I get it.
But help me understand why you don't like it. Do you think it pushes advertisers away?
That's part of it. That's the business side of me, because in my experience, it does, you know, or it can. That's part of it. But part of it is, I guess, because I've seen so much of it and it's so overdone that when I see it, it doesn't make me feel empathy. In this case for Cody, doesn't make me feel sympathetic towards him. It just makes me feel like, oh, they're trying really hard here. That's why I say it's just me. The good news is we didn't see it on the rest of the show.
Right.
It wasn't like five other guys got juice, which is typically what we see. Some promotion. It's like every other match, somebody's getting split open. It gets to the point where it doesn't mean anything. In this case, you know, didn't see it anywhere else. We haven't seen blood in WWE in a long time. So I guess it mattered. The part of me that liked it was it's a throwback to old school. It's like the way it used to be done. That part of me likes that, a traditional way of getting heat. The fact that there was blood all over the weight belt that had Cody's mama or Mama Cody or whatever it was.
Mama Rhodes,
yeah. That was a nice touch to bring Cody's mom into this. I'd like to see her face when this is going on.
She's going to be front row at WrestleMania. You just know it.
Have you spent time with Michelle, right?
Fantastic woman. How could you not love her?
One of the sweetest people on the face of the earth.
Yeah.
But she can get hot.
Yes.
She does have a fuse.
Cuban.
It's like really, really short. So I'll be anxious to see her as well.
You would have loved to have seen her at an AEW pay-per-view. I forget who she was wrestling. I think he was wrestling Jericho. Forget, but I think that's right. And it's Jericho made his way over with Cody, and obviously Jericho's got the advantage, and he's putting a whooping on Cody or something. He starts talking trash to Michelle. She rears back, slaps him, and then starts hollering, "Fuck you." And I was like, this is the real Michelle, and it's fantastic. And I can't wait to see her at WrestleMania. She's going to steal the show. I mean, I know we're fantasy booking the territory, and I know this isn't going to happen. But in my dream scenario, not only does Stone Cold come help make the save, but Mama Rhodes is doing a beer bash with Stone Cold. That'd be hilarious.
Well, why do you think that's not going to happen?
I hope that happens. That would be so awesome. I'd get that shit framed like it, in my house. Yeah, it's amazing.
See, I mean, you just fantasy booked a really, really cool spot there. I mean, if that were to happen, because obviously Dustin Rhodes and Austin, a lot of history there.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of all just makes so much sense. Like, just what you laid out there could be a really great moment inside of WrestleMania, especially with the focus. And this isn't the first time Rock has brought up Michelle, Cody's mama. Been coming. This is a reoccurring theme we're seeing here.
Yes.
So it lends me to think. It lends me to believe that you might have something there. Be onto something. I'm excited. Just this conversation makes me excited even more. That's the other thing I was thinking about. Okay, this show. What are they trying to do in the show? Obviously, it's build anticipation without giving the audience so much in terms of action and physical confrontation that they feel like there's nothing. There's nowhere to go yet, or there's nowhere to go. Teasing them, keeping everybody apart. Tensity is there. The narrative is all there. I don't know. I think the fact that they produce that show in such a way is to people talking and to create conversation amongst people like you and I and everybody listening to the show. What's going to happen? What if they do this? Who's going to, fantasy booking is, probably one of the things they were hoping to achieve during this thing, because it helps to build anticipation.
I knew it was going to be a good show because over the weekend I got a handful of folks who texted who said, "Hey, Monday's Raw is going to be." And it was a home run and I loved it. But we decided to ask you guys. We're running polls now over at 83weeks.com. I encourage you to head over there now, hit the subscribe button, turn the notifications bell on. But when we're soliciting questions for the shows now, we won't be doing that on social, we'll be doing that on YouTube. When we're running polls about new topics, we won't be doing that on social, we'll be doing that on YouTube. But we threw a poll up last night. Our guy Derek Sabato, who helped us on the back end, threw up a poll that said, "Hey, what'd you think of the angle? How would you rate it?" And 7% was a dud, 2 stars, 2%, 3 stars, 6%, 4 stars, 16%, and an overwhelming 69% gave it 5 stars. That's with 5,500 votes when we cut it off. 69% gave it 5 stars, Eric. So I know that, we're trying to get things to a fevered pitch for WrestleMania. It feels like they did that last night. Blood be damned. People were digging it, man. Are you surprised that so many people gave that 5 stars?
No, not at all. I mean, given the intensity of it, and I know the audience, reacts positively to blood, which is why I know I'm in the minority. But it wasn't just the blood. That was a part of it. Just the intensity, the fact that it's Rock. I really dug the fact that it was raining out. Just another thing that made me feel like I'm watching live TV, right? It's just so much about that whole segment was intense and it got serious heat, old school.
It was poetic.
I'm not surprised at all. I'm not surprised a bit. I'd be surprised. I'd like to meet a couple of those 2 percenters and have a conversation with them.
Yeah. Like, what are they looking for in wrestling? Like if that's not it. And I think, this a show like last night is proof positive, in my opinion, that story matters more than matches. Now, I'm not saying matches don't matter. I'm just saying if we had to pick one, I was more excited about the stories last night, which specifically were the opening segment, Cody and The Rock, one of the crossover hours with Punk, Seth, and Drew, and then the final segment with Cody and Rock. Those are my 3 favorite segments from the show. Not 1 minute of actual in-ring wrestling happened during any of those 3 segments, but those are the 3 that resonated the most with me. And I know you're anti-blood and you're really anti-blade, but I bet there's one blade that you're actually a big fan of. But we've been talking for a while and we haven't even sniffed the topic. We are eventually going to talk about celebrity championship wrestling, but before we do, I got to bring up at least a few things. I got sent this a couple of times yesterday, but I guess RJ City sat down with, I don't know if he's called Johnny Nitro anymore, but for the purposes of our story, we're going to call him Johnny Nitro. Maybe he's Johnny Elite. I'm not exactly sure. But you know who I'm talking about. A really talented performer who you worked with in WWE. And I guess RJ, who has a lot of fun on Hey EW, which is a great show if you haven't seen it on YouTube. He asked Johnny about being your apprentice. Or you were his protege, or he was your protege, or you were his mentor. Whatever on-camera thing that happened in WWE. And RJ said something along the lines of, "Hey, what'd you learn from Eric Bischoff?" And of course, Johnny said, "Nothing." And RJ had a little tongue-in-cheek response about, "Hey, maybe in 20 years, you'll go do a podcast and say the exact opposite," or something similar. I thought it was funny. I wondered if you thought it was
funny. I saw it this morning, and I didn't feel one. I mean, look, if you're going to do it. You know what I mean? Make it mean something. But to have, if it's Johnny TV, I think that's how they refer to him, coming out and say thing, boring. And I think RJ's response was equally as boring for me. I mean, it didn't, I was hoping it would be at least funny or interesting. And it was, either. I found it interesting that they felt the need to do it. or wanted to do it, but it wasn't really funny. It wasn't really a shot. Kind of was, but not really. So it didn't have much of a zing to it.
It was funny because the people who sent it to me thought I'm pissed off. And I was like, about what?
Why would I be pissed off?
It was a silly, it was an on-camera thing. It was a storyline. It's not real life. And I don't know. It just made me chuckle that after all the times we've talked about AEW, and you specifically, maybe not so glowing at times, just to hear your name said on an AEW program made me laugh. I don't know why.
I think it was an attempt to take a shot at me, but it was such a weak-ass shot. You know, yeah, it's AEW, so it is what it is.
Well, it is what it is with Ronda Rousey, too. I got to at least put this on your radar. She's been doing a lot of publicity and doing some interviews. She's promoting her new book, as I understand it. And man, she's just letting it rip, Tater Chip. And she said some pretty pointed things. Specifically, it's hard sometimes nowhere the evil, unethical slimeball character of Vince McMahon played out for the camera ends. An actual questionably ethical, many times sued and multiple times accused of sexual misconduct, Vince McMahon begins. Pay-per-view events are held in major cities like New York, Los Angeles, and Philadelphia, as well as now twice a year in Saudi Arabia, a nation that restricts the rights of women in a way that I'm certain Vince McMahon wishes he could. WWE bills itself as a sports entertainment organization, and just like in the mainstream entertainment industry, it was by all accounts a casting couch culture where men backstage in powerful positions pressured female talent for sexual favors in return for airtime. In MMA, I originally just started them for publicity, talking about feud. But those other bitches did not get the demo, so they became personal. And in WWE, it's all fake. I love them, except for Bruce Pritchard and John Laurinaitis. They can go fuck themselves. She had a lot of other comments where she talked about, you know, that she didn't like Bruce and felt like Bruce, you know, she's just not a Bruce fan. And she was specific about saying that Johnny Ace, maybe she implied that there was a cutoff. He wasn't interested in recruiting women who were working the independent circuit. He wanted girls who would maybe been blonde haired women from Tennessee or Florida. I don't know if that's specifically referencing someone or not, but she certainly indicated that she has no interest in going back. She can't deal with the mediocrity.
Well, that's good.
Blah, blah, blah. But she was very complimentary. And I mean, very complimentary of Triple H. But she also said that when Stephanie slapped her, she got a concussion and she felt like she couldn't speak up. I mean, I don't know if she's intending to go scorched earth, but her, it seems like every day she's got another headline. I'm sure you've seen them. What do you make of all this?
It leaves a bad, I've never had a real high opinion of Ronda anyway. I mean, in MMA I did. I really, really enjoyed watching her. Nothing but respect for her background in judo and the fact that she could transition into MMA and did really well for a while. But when she got knocked out by Holly Holm, that was it. That changed her dramatically. And even her character, her personality character in UFC, she was kind of a whiny, just whiny. And when they brought her into WWE and made her a baby face, it didn't make sense to me because she's not a baby face. Just kind of a, not. She's a much, much better heel. But they wanted to cast her as a babyface. It was a very, very, it was a square peg in a round hole for Ronda because she's not a performer. She's not an actress, although she's done some acting. She's learning and she's getting better. But for the most part, she's an athlete trying to become a performer. At least she was in WWE at that. And she wasn't able to pull it off. So number one, she was miscast. And I never really felt like she really wanted to be there. I always had this feeling, doesn't mean I'm right about it, but it was just my feeling that she was just she was in it for the payday, wasn't really passionate about what she was doing. I think when Holly Holmes knocked her out, she lost her passion for just about everything. And she was there for the money. That was my impression. However, right or wrong, I'm right. And to hear this all now, it just sounds so bitter and so angry that I kind of feel the way I felt about her when she lost to Holly Holmes in UFC, when she just came out and was just bitchy about it. Look, you get knocked out, and she got knocked the fuck out. I've been there. I know how that feels. It is not a great feeling, especially when you go back and watch it over and over and over again and know that the world is watching it over and over. But that, I think something changed. And again, I've never said a word, never had a word conversation with her. I don't know. Right or wrong, but it's just the way I feel, the vibe I get from her. She's a bitter, angry woman. And hopefully she'll sell a lot of books because she's really, I think she's burying herself. My vibe.
I don't think for a second that she needed the money. She was watching wrestling way back when the Shield broke up and her friends posted her reaction to it. I mean, she is a big time wrestling fan. And I think her experience was less than awesome, but almost everybody has a similar story about working with Vince. I mean, even AJ Styles came out recently, said, I wish all those other guys in these other companies would realize this is a new WWE. This isn't the same WWE. And I would love to have seen what this version of WWE could have done with Ronda, but position her as a heel. I agree with you. She was miscast as a babyface. You're asking her to do something that's out of her wheelhouse. You know, if you go back and you study the way she built feuds, for lack of a better word, in MMA, she was the heel. Now, she was dominant, so people love to see that. They love to see a winner. I mean, that was a time where you just knew armbar submission, first round, can't stop it. Like, here it comes. And then, of course, as you said, she lost. And maybe the bloom was off the rose. And maybe the bloom's off the rose for wrestling for now. But mark my words, Ronda Rousey will be back in WWE. I'm not saying necessarily wrestling, but she's going in the Hall of Fame. She's going to be around. It's a whole new ball game with Vince and others out. I think she'll be back. I don't think this is over. I think she likes it. If she didn't like it, I don't know that she would still be talking about it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, she'd be talking about it if she wants to sell a book.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. I for one, am a Ronda fan. I felt like she, certainly we didn't get the best of Ronda, but I don't know that that's necessarily her fault. And let's also appreciate, she was really thrown to the wolves. A guy like Kurt Angle was afforded the opportunity to get reps and learn and get better and then get on TV. She's learning in front of us. It is a different thing when you're immediately on TV right away and judged by that. So we'll see if she really has a long-term passion for it or not, but boy, people are talking about it. And I'm curious to see, you know, what the next quote is going to be. It feels like every time I log in, there's another statement from Ronda. Do you think we will see any other future crossover? I mean, clearly we saw Michael Chandler a few weeks ago calling out Conor McGregor at a Monday Night Raw. We know the history of Ronda in the UFC and certainly Brock Lesnar and Punk and a bunch of others. Bobby Lashley was in MMA, but not UFC. You get the idea. Do you think there will be more of this crossover? Do you think there will be UFC stars in some capacity at WrestleMania?
At WrestleMania or in WrestleMania?
At this year's WrestleMania, just attending the show, yeah. Getting involved physically.
I do. And I'm here for it. I think that's great. Sure we will. I think I've read comments, executives in the UFC talking about, you know, having talent at some of the bigger events and that. So I think so for sure, celebrities, you know, a lot of these fighters are legit celebrities in their world. So I think, of course, you will. As far as seeing, you know, UFC fighters transition into WWE, I'm sure that we will at some point, but I don't think it's going to become any more frequent than it was before the merger. I think some people are going to be really interested in doing it and able to do it. Well, we'll see it. I was following the news on my 40-hour trek to get home. And there's some great looking talent coming out of the NCAA wrestling finals going on right now that went on over the weekend. I mean, super heavyweight, can't remember his name right now. I think he weighed 265 or 285. Looks like he was right out of central casting for a wrestling movie. Big budget wrestling. Looks great. Someone like that, spends a little bit of time in UFC, makes that transition, definitely I could see another Kurt Angle coming out of the woodwork. But I don't think we're going to see a lot of it.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what's next with WrestleMania, because it feels like it's getting to a fever pitch. I mean, heard that they were trying to do something with Sylvester Stallone, and there's no telling what other crossover we're going to see at this year's WrestleMania. What I know for sure, though, is we're going to be doing over at 83weeks.com, our YouTube channel, Eric Bischoff's top five WrestleMania moments. He's going to be breaking down his top five reasons this WrestleMania is going to be the biggest WrestleMania yet, and some of the bigger moments through history. We're going to be doing a lot of these top fives and top tens and things like that. They're going to be exclusive to 83weeks.com. They won't be posting here on the RSS feed. Of course, you're going to get them early and ad-free over at adfreeshows.com, but be sure to check us out at 83weeks.com if you haven't already. Eric, let's talk about our topic, why we're really here today. And then
I forgot why we're here today. I thought we got done talking about why we're here today, right?
You know what? Let's do this. Let's do some questions, and then we'll talk about our topic. We got a live studio audience here from adfreeshows.com. I want to give a shout out to everybody who's hanging out with us. Mike Hoop wants to know, Eric, would you keep on with the promos or have some tag matches with Bloodline and Cody, Jay, and Seth? I, for one, don't think they should touch till WrestleMania. What say you?
Absolutely agree with you, Conrad. I don't think they should touch. The more they touch, the more interesting the match will be. Build that anticipation. Make them want it. This is like the professional wrestling of sexual foreplay. You got to give it some time. You got to build up the anticipation in order for the ending to be as magic as you want it to be. Don't jump in and do it right away. And no, I don't believe in any more contact than is absolutely necessary, as we were talking about. Largest part of the beginning of the show. I think the magic of involved in last night, a lot of it, but I think the greatest part of it for me in terms of formatting goal of the show was all that show did was build anticipation. Stories already there, anticipation, reality, surprise, action. WWE is hitting on all five of those critical areas compared to the SARSA form. And any more contact than is absolutely necessary right now is only going to diminish it.
Carl Hayes wants to know, do you see WWE's women's division getting their own TV show maybe once streaming starts? They seem to be growing and stacked with talent. Could you see a women's only show sort of to maybe compete with WOW? Would you see that?
Could. Got the talent to do it, right?
Yep.
Especially if you look at, you know, including NXT talent. Well, of course, yes, I think it could happen. Do I think that there's a television market for it? That I'm not sure of. I know the, what is it? WOW?
Yeah.
Is that the name of the
organization? Women of Wrestling, David McLean.
Women of Wrestling. I mean, I don't follow it. Obviously it's in syndication. It's not on cable. Last I checked, but in terms of its viewership, it's competitive with AEW. So there's clearly a market for it. I don't know that there'll be a market for it in cable, but if there is, the talent is there, the abilities are there, production capabilities are there, everything's there. So there's a market for it. Why not?
It's funny you say if there's a market there for it, because as we're recording this on a Tuesday morning, just yesterday it was announced that WWE is doing a deal with Roku for a brand new all-access docuseries called WWE Next Gen. The idea is, I guess they've been running these tryouts and camps, and they're trying to see who could be the next superstar. And John Cena is the executive producer for it. But the reason I bring this up is it's not on Peacock. It's not on USA. It's not on Fox. It's on Roku. And I thought, wow, that's different. What'd you think of the news that on April 1st, so just a few days from now, WWE Next Gen is going to have a presence on Roku?
I think it's, again, the business of the business, growing, expanding, reaching out into other areas of entertainment that are beyond just cable and network. I think it's fantastic. I think you're going to see more and more of that type of thing, because there's other companies out there other than Roku. There's Vizio, for example, television manufacturer who is out actually looking for original content that could be a part of the built-in app of televisions that are sold all over the country. You know, so there's more and more people that are looking at wrestling as a way to capture an audience. And I think that is nothing but fantastic.
Let's do another question here. This is from Drew Russell, who's a part of our live studio audience. I'm not criticizing The Rock by any means. He's my all-time favorite star in history. But do you think he's outshining every person on the roster without trying to just because?
God, that's a great question. That was actually, I want to say a note, but I kind of want to be careful how I say this because I don't want to contradict myself. But it's complicated because I almost feel as a viewer, I'm not overthinking this. Perhaps Roman and Cody feels less than as a result of all of the focus and the magnitude of what Rock and Cody are. I actually feel like Rock and Cody is the only main event at WrestleMania that we should be talking about.
Well, hang on now. That's night one. Like,
I know. I understand. That's why I'm conflicted with it.
Yes.
I get it. And because it's the two nights, and I get it.
It's a real challenge.
But in terms of the question that was just asked, I almost feel like Rock is overshadowing everything else. Now, the finish will take care of that, assuming we're going to have a great finish. Sure that we will. But right now, in the moment, I think Rock is overshadowing Roman Reigns. Just being honest.
How could he not? I mean, I think that's got to be kind of the idea because that helps build towards the next show. But I don't really worry about outshining. You know, I mean, I think he's supposed... He's a legendary Hall of Famer who has this presence. I mean, you saw the reaction The Rock got. He came out and said nothing and did nothing and whispered, but we had no idea what it was. And they ate it up. They when he exited the ring, they booed. He did nothing. So I just think they're using The Rock very, very effectively. And I'm so glad they made a pivot. I can't imagine that the original plan of Rock and Roman would somehow be better than what we're actually.
No, and I certainly don't mean to imply that.
Yeah.
And really what I'm suggesting is that Rock creates a very, very, very unique problem. And that is the magnitude of his stardom. It's almost impossible for Rock not to suck up the oxygen in the room when he walks into it. It is what it is. That's the benefit of having the Rock. It's also the reality of having is he's going to suck up the energy room because he is that big of a star. Again, I think the finish and the story will manage all of that. And at the end, it won't be a negative. But right now, this morning, as I was watching the show, I thought, all I'm thinking of is Rock and Cody. I'm really not thinking too much about Roman. And that's partly because of what I was watching, designed to do that.
But sure.
Yeah, to answer the question, yeah, I think a little bit, man. He's going to overshadow anybody. That's the fucking Rock.
Travis Medway, shout out to Travis. I don't remember seeing Travis on a lot of live streams. Appreciate you being here with us and joining us from adfreeshows.com. He's got a question. I know you're not a fan of tag team main event matches, but is this upcoming Mania one as good as it?
I think it is. I mean, and one of the reasons it is because the stakes are going to impact night two. How do you not love that? Not that I don't like tag team wrestling. It's that it's hard to manage if you're a producer, because in terms of roster size, in order to have a vibrant, robust, viable tag team division, you've got to have a lot of tag team you can play with. Build stories around, which means you're going to have twice as many people on your roster that are tag team wrestlers that you would normally need. So it's a budgetary issue, and it's been one of the problems. you have tag teams, but they're kind of secondary. They're really not a lot of focus on tag teams, generally speaking, because you just need to have so many to round out a good, meaningful division, tag team division. But when you can have a tag team that's a main event set up like this, where not only do you have major stars primarily wrestle singles, you have major stars coming together for a purpose, and the purpose is to raise the stakes for night two. How do you not love that?
I have to love that. Coach Keith is asking the question we're all asking lately. So what a great question. I know I'm going to be putting you on the spot. I already know your answer. Eric, and please, can you answer Conrad also? If Vince was still in charge or had any say in the company, would the WWE?
No.
Isn't that crazy?
I mean, we saw that beginning to happen before Vince was forced to officially, permanently resign.
Yes.
So, and we saw almost within a week or 2 weeks of Triple H, Paul Levesque, I'm sorry, taking over, a lot more consistency, a lot better storytelling, consistency being probably the biggest one, continuity. But I don't think any question at all that WWE creatively is much, and it's not to take away anything from what Vince McMahon achieved. Did you read Becky Lynch's interview?
Yes.
Talking about being conflicted. I think Becky did a fantastic job. And I think a lot of people to varying degrees that worked for Vince, with Vince, feel much the same way. I do. I'm conflicted. I'm in an even weirder way because we were competitive.
Right.
And it was an ugly, brutal, bloody, legitimate fight. Competition that I'm coming to work for, in the process of all of that, I gained a tremendous amount of respect for Vince McMahon and what he's done for the business. You would have never heard me say, although it was true, but I was too focused on my own shit to think about it. If it weren't for Vince McMahon and WWE, there would have never been a WC.
Right.
There certainly wouldn't be an AEW. It would be a lot of things. And when you look at it from that perspective and you're honest enough and intelligent enough to see that big picture and admit that were it not for Vince's creativity, vision for the industry, all of the good things that Vince did, you and I would probably not even know each other.
Right.
So that's one perspective I have on Vince McMahon, but it's in direct contrast to what we've read and learned about in recent months. So I'm not taking away from Vince's creativity, some of the genius things, creatively genius things that probably did starting back in the 80s that had his fingerprints all over it. But I worked for the guy for a few months back in 2019, and that was not something that I could see myself doing. He was a wreck creatively. His process demoralized people. It created inconsistency. Continuity was hard to even talk about because Vince's opinion of what he wanted to do changed from one day to the next or from one meeting to the next, the day of the show. All you have to do is have talent come into the room, sit down with Vince for 45 minutes, you walk out and you're tearing up scripts and starting over again. All of that was out of control. And I think with Paul Levesque in control, along with Bruce, and you know, Ed Koski, a name people don't hear about too much, there's a lot of great talent, writing talent, creative talent, experienced talent as producers and writers. Now with Brian Gewirtz there, I don't know how much input Brian has. I think the show is reached. I think it's creatively a better show than it's ever been to me.
Eric, we're actually recording live here on a Tuesday morning, and we've got some breaking news that I want to get your take on, but we need to take a break right now. So Eric, we got to talk about the breaking news. I can't believe that you know, this is happening while we're recording. But it turns out AEW has just announced they have a new COO, a chief operating officer. Of course, this is, I believe I've heard Jeff Jarrett pronounce it, Hoshea Irby. I've not yet met Mr. Irby, but as I understand it, he used to work at WWE, and that's where some people you and I know first met Mr. Irby. But Tony Khan announced today that he is now the COO of AEW. He's going to oversee strategic planning and execution of live events, marketing, finance, human resources, licensing, consumer products, and other major lines of business for the company. He's coming from Clemson, and he's worked for WWE, PBR, Alliance of American Football. Here's a quote from Tony. Hoshea brings decades of experience within sports, entertainment, and wrestling industries alongside an incredible work ethic and passion for our brand. As chief operating officer, he will be a phenomenal asset to AEW as we enter the next phase of the company's ongoing business development and expansion. You know, listen, the knock on AEW for a while has been they just needed more corporate structure. They needed more support. You know, maybe Tony was burning it at both ends. Maybe he needed more help. As a reminder, he has a sports data company, a football club, and the Jacksonville Jaguars, and oh yeah, AEW. And there's been some criticism that perhaps he was stretched too thin and doing too much, which is probably fair. So having somebody in your back pocket who's going to join your company and take that role as COO, that's got to be a value add. What do you make of this news, Eric?
Hard to comment on too much because I don't know the individual. I don't know what he did in WWE. Look, I think bringing in highly qualified, experienced management can only be a good thing. I don't think that that's AEW's biggest problem in terms of where they're at. Their biggest problem is creative. And until that is solved, none of these other areas, you know, marketing, licensing, for example, nobody's going to be interested in licensing your property unless your property becomes legitimately successful. Those are all things that come with success and growth. I don't know that someone operating in the capacity traditionally of a COO is going to have enough impact on those specific areas you just mentioned to really matter too much in the short or even midterm. Long term, yes. And if that's the strategy, it was a good decision on Tony's part. I think Tony, and I've said this a million times, Tony definitely does need to surround himself with qualified, experienced, legitimately successful people in their respective areas of discipline, particularly when it comes to the on-camera product, because that's what's suffering. But if bringing in someone like Mr. Irby, is that his name?
Yep.
Is able to take some pressure off Tony, if Tony's actually engaged in a lot of those areas, able to come in and take some pressure off Tony so Tony can focus more on creative, then potentially that's a good thing, particularly if there's other people working with Tony in creative that can actually learn how to produce a television show because they don't know how to produce television. There's enough people there that do. It's just a matter of, will Tony listen? Will Tony take guidance from people who know more than he does? That's what it always comes down to. Especially with strong personalities. I don't know that Tony's a strong personality per se. He's a unique personality. He's got all the money and he's funding it himself. So that gives him, gives him a very, very loud voice, clearly. But learning how to delegate and recognizing one's strengths and weaknesses is an ongoing process for most people. It certainly is for me, has been for me, and still is. And I think Tony would be really well served to bring in people like Mr. Irby and others who can assist in the areas that AEW the most creative. Jen Pepperman's there. Jen Pepperman, great resource. Will he listen to her? Will he take some guidance? Will he, and just experiment? with another way of doing it and give it enough time to see if it's a it's a better process or not. There are people there in AEW right now. He doesn't have to hire anybody. He just has to learn how to listen and delegate and give some people enough room to fail.
Well, I, for one, am glad that they got some more help in there. I know that, you know, it's a startup. We got some growing pains. We're working for that second contract. This is going to be a big year for AEW. So I hope it feels like they've got a lot of momentum right now. Like, you know, we've seen some really, really fun episodes in a row now, and we've seen really fantastic Raws. It feels like we've got a lot of momentum in the wrestling business. And Josh Henney has a great question that I wanted to ask you with us as a live studio audience member from adfreeshows.com. He says, social media usually spoils everything. How great is it that WWE is creating anticipation still? What can they be doing to make it work? I mean, the anticipation, I think you nailed it earlier, of wondering, like, what did The Rock whisper? And by the way, I think what he said is, if you're trying to practice your lip reading, I'm going to make you bleed tonight. And then he did it. It was awesome. It was well done. And hopefully we'll see more of that in WWE programming in the future. And I don't know, is that because Vince is out? Is it because Brian is back? Is it a combination of things? But anticipation, it's the biggest part of wrestling. And I got a friend of mine who used to do TV shows. He used to have this formula. He would say SARSA. And I think that one of those A's, I'm pretty sure, was anticipation.
I agree, and I think, thanks for the nod. It goes back to what we were talking about earlier with Vince McMahon being head of creative. What we're talking about here are little tiny details, right? The Rock coming out and saying nothing, no, that wasn't a little tiny detail. That was a big decision creatively. It was a really big decision. But the execution of it, whispering in Cody's ear, you know, threading it throughout the show. That's an attention to detail within how many times have you heard me say disciplined storytelling? And I'm wondering how many people that have heard me beat on that drum without mercy, beat that drum talking about it. Disciplined, well-structured story. And that's what we're seeing. Disciplined and well-structured, meaning little details, and stringing those little details together to create a narrative, and creating a narrative that creates questions. It's not brain surgery. It's a craft. It's an art. It's a subtlety, but it's hard to reach that level of storytelling when you're constantly changing gears and shifting on the fly and changing basic stories on the fly. And adding things in at the last minute, you lose that continuity, lose the discipline within the structure of a story, so that you're getting plot points along the way that create the anticipation that makes everything work. It's one of the reasons that I lose my shit when people talk about the and again, I'm not here to beat up on AEW, but there's such a contrast to the storytelling in WWE and the lack of storytelling or the excuse of a story in AEW. AEW stories are nothing more than angles that justify a match. If that, oftentimes they're just fucking random, right? We've all heard the stories from people that we all know about shit changing minute by minute backstage before a show. Same things. And it's one of the reasons that I call this shit out, because everybody in AEW was so quick, you know, to talk about how in WCW, you know, we wouldn't know what we were doing until an hour before the show. Same thing with WWE. We didn't know what we were doing until an hour before the show. Well, guess what, folks? The talent in AEW don't know what the fuck they're doing until after the show starts half. We all, those of us who have contacts behind the scenes, we all know that is true. And that's one of the things that's holding AEW down, is the lack of continuity and consistency that manifests as a result of just random booking and emotional changes of direction as opposed to a plan. I think what we're seeing right now in WWE is a plan. a lot of extremely talented writers are now able to focus on the little details that they know will help build anticipation and give you the plot point architecture you need within the storylines for the storyline to be effective. And we're seeing now, because of Paul Levesque and Bruce Pritchard and others who are involved in that process, they have the time and the ability now to focus on those little details. And those little details are what matters. Somebody told me once, I don't know who it was, I think it was Mike Shields, actually the guy who was responsible for getting me in to work for Vern Gagne in the AWA. Vern obviously made the final decision, but it was Mike Shields who got me in the door. And Mike Shields, pretty sure it was him, told me one time that great television is nothing more than great attention to a lot of little details. All television is little details. The better you are at putting those little details together and crafting them into an arc of a story that builds anticipation and then pays off at the end, much like Blue Chew. The better you are at that, the higher performance your storytelling process is, the higher performance the story will deliver. And that's what we're seeing. And I don't think it's like anybody woke up and learned how to do it in WWE. I think now, because of the structure in the process, the way things have changed with Paul Levesque in charge, along with his team, I think you're seeing the best of great writing talent coming out and manifesting on the screen.
I for one, am really excited and motivated about the rest of 2024 in wrestling. It feels like we're going to have a landmark year this year. I mean, here we are at the end of Q1, and we've already had a big Royal Rumble, a huge Vince McMahon story, major power shift and shakeup, Sting's last match, The Rock is back. It feels like WrestleMania is bigger than ever. This might be like a banner year for professional wrestling as a whole, and I got to think a lot of that credit goes to the storytelling. I mean, really.
I don't know how we can't. And we wouldn't have been having this conversation a year and a half ago or 2 years ago.
Yeah.
The storytelling of WWE has changed so dramatically. And it's all been, you know, along the lines of Paul Levesque taking over and stepping away. And I think we're going to continue to see better and better storytelling. The more success they have, the more confidence they'll have in that process, I think we'll see more and more of it, which is only going to lead to more and more success for WWE. And hopefully at some point, Tony will wake up and go, okay, I've got to change the way I do things in order to be viable. And to truly be, you know, as Tony likes to say, a legitimate contender. You're not right now. You could be, but you're not. And I think the more Tony sees the success of WWE, hopefully, the more open-minded he will be into putting more emphasis on story and less emphasis on the spectacle. Because that's what AEW is really a spectacle-driven company, and WWE is a story-driven company. Those are the two big different companies. One is a spectacle, one is a story.
Man, I'm excited that we had an opportunity to catch up on all that's going on in wrestling. I'm excited that we got to talk with some of our live studio audience. I want to give a shout out to Josh Henney and Coach Rosie and Travis Medway and so many other people who chimed in. I know Bobby was here and Carney was here, and it means a lot that you guys show up and hang out with us early on a work day like this. Shout out to Eric Green, who's hanging in there. Coach Keith's in the house, Mike Hoop. It's a big deal that you guys are hanging out with us, because we know, you know, our schedules were shuffled a little bit this week, but you're still here. And Mike Hoop wants to know, Eric, you spent some time in Whiskey Row in Prescott. That's a fun question, a little personal question. Have you spent any time there?
Yes, I have. Prescott was about an hour and a half drive north of where we lived in Cave Creek, Arizona, Scottsdale. And Mrs. B would jump on a Harley, and Mrs. B and I would jump on a Harley and head up to Prescott. And it's a very, very cool town. I mean, it's an old, it's a Western town. And Whiskey Row is just a collection of bars. Famous. Talked about the Palace. You know, Doc Holliday is basically a bouncer there. got a lot of history. And yeah, we'd go up there quite often. It was a beautiful drive, especially on Harley. And Prescott was a little higher elevation than Scottsdale. So even in the middle of the summer when it was like 110 degrees down in Cave Creek, Arizona, where we lived, it would be, you know, 85 or 90 up there. And that was comfortable. So yeah, we would go up there quite frequently.
We got to mention that over at adfreeshows.com, not only do you get to be a part of our live studio audience and you get this bonus content from new series like Tuesdays with the Taskmaster or Lex Expressed or Monday Mailbag with Mike Chioda, you get all that stuff, but you also get bonuses from like Eric Bischoff. How about this? Wrestling with Shadows. As I understand it, you're going to be sitting down to watch the Bret Hart documentary Wrestling with Shadows for the very first time. And I know folks will be excited to hear your thoughts and your reaction to it. And they can do all of this over at adfreeshows.com. We've got a ton of bonus content in the archives for you to enjoy as well. Check it out, adfreeshows.com. And we were intending to talk about Hulk Hogan's Celebrity Championship Wrestling. We're like 90 minutes in and we haven't even started. So we'll kick that can and we'll talk about it after WrestleMania. Obviously, WrestleMania is paramount. We're going to be talking all things WrestleMania next week as well. And we want you involved in the conversation. We're going to be throwing up polls. We've got some questions. We're going to let you vote on topics and things you want to hear about. 83weeks.com is your home for all things Eric Bischoff. Make sure you're subscribing and you're liking and you're turning on the notification. Throw us some comments. We've got some live streams coming up that are going to be there. You don't want to miss it. It's 83weeks.com. You can also see the Hall of Fame induction. We're going to be discussing that and a whole lot more, I'm sure, in the next week or so. And what I'm really excited about, one of the ideas that we kicked around, Eric, that we're going to be doing soon is, if there were a WCW Hall of Fame, who would be in that class? Now, I know there's never going to be a tradition. I know there was in the mid-90s, but if with the benefit of hindsight now, who would be in that WCW Hall of Fame? And I say the benefit of hindsight because I bet you didn't even notice what today's day is.
No.
March 26, 23 years ago today, was the very last night. How crazy is that? It's funny. I didn't think of that until we sat down to click record, and I looked in the bottom right-hand corner of my computer, and I go, wait, March 26th? How about that? It's it's pretty poetic that when we did finally get to record this episode, we didn't record it 2 days before the anniversary or a day before the anniversary. We recorded it on the actual anniversary. And we would love to hear your feedback. Who do you think should be in the WCW Hall of Fame? Hit us up at 83weeks.com. If you just can't get enough Eric Bischoff, be sure to check out his new book, Grateful. It's over at Amazon or bischoffbook.com. Also love to have your interactions on social. If you haven't already, follow the show at 83weeks on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. You can also interact with Eric on Twitter. He's pretty active there, at ebischoff. Or you can see a bunch of beautiful pictures of Eric's house and dog and family. Oh my, at The Real Eric Bischoff on Instagram. And boxofgimmicks.com has all that you can shake a stick at. 83weeksmerch.com has Heat is Life. I'm an Eric Bischoff guy. Cody is the guy and so much more. And I think we've mentioned it before, but now you can buy an NWO shirt from Eric Bischoff. This is a real thing. Glad we got to see your smiling face, and I can't wait to see your bar, and I can't wait to talk about next week's TV, man. We've got a lot of big shows coming up. We've got the Go Home Monday Night Raw for WrestleMania. We've got the Go Home Friday Night SmackDown for WrestleMania, and not one, but two nights of WrestleMania. Man, I'm feeling it. I'm ready for WrestleMania this weekend. I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm going to need to take a vacation once WrestleMania is over, and I'm not even involved in it. Crying out loud. Another thing we're doing over at 83weeks.com starting tomorrow night, Wednesday night, I'm going to be doing a four-part series with an author by the name of Brad Lejuki. Brad wrote, this is his second book. First book was called The Wax Pack. His most recent book, which is coming out, I think, a week from today, is called Six Pack. And the book follows six of the principles of WrestleMania 3, goes behind the scenes, some amazing, amazing interviews you've never heard before. And the amount of research that Brad did for this book was similar to what Guy Evans did to research the book Nitro. The quality of the book is so fantastic, and we're going to touch on, we're going to break down a couple of the main chapters in the book and talk about what went into getting the interviews with these talents and the research that went into it. We're going to learn some things that nobody's ever heard before about WWE F, back when Vince McMahon Sr. was involved. Lawsuits, research, travel logs, payoffs, all kinds of stuff that Brad was able to unearth in his research. And we're going to talk about all of it. And you'll be able to tune in to 83weeks.com. You'll learn about the book and get to meet Brad. And it's another great thing coming to you from 83weeks.com. It's starting again tomorrow night, Wednesday night. We'll be doing it for 4 weeks straight.
I'm pumped about it. I've had a chance to see the book, read the book. I love the book. I think Brad's done a great job. Even did a data dump and some of the stuff that we're going to be sharing. I had a chance to preview. My goodness, the internal reports that he has access to, the lawsuits that he was able to dig up. Like, if you're a hardcore wrestling nerd, you don't want to miss any of it. It's all going to be on our YouTube channel, 83weeks.com. If you haven't already, check it out. Man, he's got the entire Bill Eadie lawsuit with the WWE. I mean, it is hundreds of pages, and I actually thumbed through all of them, and it was fascinating to see a real page turner. Not only that, but like internal reports for what merch was sold at WrestleMania 3, all this and so much more, 83weeks.com, and be sure to check out the brand new book. We're going to have all the details on that in the coming weeks, but join us tomorrow night, Wednesday night, 83weeks.com. Eric, thanks for the time. Welcome back, and I'm looking forward to catching up again soon. We'll see you guys next week right here on 83 Weeks with Eric Bischoff.